triumvirate. Chapter 12, The Law of the Lion. Ultramar.
You have doubts, brother.
The lion stated it without question, and New Gilliman was required to answer as the two of them paced a long balcony on the southern aspect of the fortress of Hera. 30 meters below them, a company of Presental Guard marched towards the Porta Hera, their footfalls in unison. It was almost dusk, the day spent in long discussion about the Imperium, Sotha, and preparations for the declaration of Legatus Militant that would suspend the civil authorities of Macragge and hand executive power to the Imperial Triumvirate.
No, I have fears, brother, grave fears.
The lion stopped and looked south across Macragge Civitas. The city was sparkling with thousands of lights as twilight encroached, and beyond he could see the blue plumes of plasma jets rising from the landing fields. He could smell salt amongst the fume of traffic and people as the wind shifted to come in from the sea. His silence invited Gilliman to continue.
Every action begets a reaction. Have you considered that Kurz wants us to assume absolute authority? He wages a different war from us, for objectives we cannot guess at. He is insane, lashing out blindly at any target, a wounded, maddened animal trying to protect itself. You heard Lord Sanguinius's account as well as I did, brother. Kurz's madness has an endgame. He seeks justification, affirmation, retaliation. You are giving him that.
The lion thought about this, knowing that he owed his brother the courtesy of proper consideration.
The alternative is to let him wreak havoc across Macragge, across the Imperium. Our new emperor said it. He must be stopped. That is not what he said,
Gilliman argued. The other Primarch sighed and turned away, leaning his back against the pale stone of the balustrade.
The practical application of more security brings about consequences that theory cannot predict. Such as, we are asking my legion to stand against their own. This is Macragge, the world of the Ultramarines. Many of my warriors have connections here, family ties. We were never meant to rule directly. You must understand the potential conflict this generates. Unforeseen consequences are just that, brother. What ruin will Kurz bring about if we do not curtail him now? I cannot conceive of such a future. The best thing about the future is that it comes one day at a time.
Gilliman straightened, but did not look at his companion.
Tomorrow will bring protest. How will we deal with that? You will deal with it, brother. As Lord Warden, it remains your duty. I will be busy commanding my legion. You cannot escape the responsibility of tomorrow by evading it today. I evade nothing.
The lion looked at Gilliman and could not guess what his thoughts were. It was a hard task the Ultramarine's Primarch had taken upon himself. The Dark Angel sought to alleviate some of that burden, allowing his brother the time and space to perfect the design of his creation.
And you need not concern yourself with conflicts of interest. My warriors will show no fear or favor in the application of their duties. Your legion's hands are clean. You cannot mean,
Gilliman started, looking in shock at the lion.
You cannot bring your legion to Macragge.
I have already issued orders, brother. You have admitted that your warriors cannot be trusted to guard their own.
You think you can usurp me on my own world?
Gilliman was almost hoarse, throat tightened by his distraught state.
Our world, the lion replied. The cradle of the new Imperium. Caliban lies beyond the ruined storm, far from my reach. Half my legion I left under the command of Corswain. I have given up my home, my warriors, to join this endeavor. What are you willing to sacrifice?
Horus had tried to take the Imperium for himself, and Gilliman had decided to build a new one. As much as he did not want to belittle his brother, the Primarch of the Dark Angels knew that there could only be one winner in the war to come. There would be no second place. Kurz had to be dealt with at any cost. Any cost. Even Gilliman's pride. The lion stepped close, his voice dropping.
Do you trust me, brother?
Gilliman found her walking the long gardens on the roof terraces behind the Praetorium. Tarasha Yutan, the Chamberlain Principal, as others knew her, though to the Primarch she was in all other purposes his mother. Her wisdom, her human insight, was an essential part of him, as much as the statecraft and physical courage of Conor, his long-dead adoptive father. She was tall, though dwarfed by his presence, and carried her years with dignity, or so it seemed. Perhaps she masked frailties in his presence. It was impossible to know. In a singular way, it had been a blessing that Conal had died in his prime, though the ignoble manner of that death, cut down by a cowardly traitor, was no cause for gladness. But Gilliman had been spared the ordeal of watching his father become old, his body fading, perhaps his faculties too, even as Rabute would have continued to grow beyond the limits of any normal human. Tarasha was of the mind to consider such a thing and spare him the worst of such distractions.
You are thinking about him, she said, sitting on a marble bench beside the hard-pruned remains of a bush.
There had been no snow yet, but the garden was prepared for winter. She wore a heavy white coat, the collar and sleeves lined with dark fur. Her face was quite flushed by the chill, her hair neatly pushed behind a blue woolen cap. Her staff was propped against the arm of the bench. She caught his look.
Colonel, of course, though I am sure you have been thinking of your true father a lot as well.
How can you tell such a thing? He asked.
He sat next to her, not wishing to loom over her with his bulk, but nearly folding his legs double on the low bench made him feel even more gigantic and ungainly next to her.
Stand, she said, or you will fidget me to death.
He stood, grateful, and started to pace, hands behind his back.
There is a wistfulness in your face when you think of him these days, she explained after a moment. I can see your eyes looking into the past.
I feel that I must succeed or fail two fathers, Gilliman admitted, stopping to run a finger along the branch of a coniferous tree overhanging the path.
It was at head height for him, but to the gardeners it would have been no intrusion. Always there were reminders that he was an immortal, trying to fit a mortal world.
I am not entirely sure he would approve of Imperium Secundus.
If you were the type to seek approval for its own merit, Horus would have sent Lorgar as an ambassador, not a war leader. Tell me what this is really about.
Gilliman took some time to gather his thoughts, searching for the words that would convey his nebulous and miasmic collection of hopes and fears about Imperium Secundus. In the end, it could all be rendered down to a simple statement, one that was almost impossible to voice. Yutan waited expectantly, though he detected a hint of impatience.
Do I need to say it? She said, standing up.
No,
Gilliman replied. He looked away, and then back at her.
I do not think the lion is an ally.
I see.
Yutan rubbed her nose and pulled out a pair of black gloves from the pockets of her coat. She spoke as she slipped them on.
You cannot trust him. He likes his secrets. He has lied to you more than once.
No man has a good enough memory to be a successful liar.
But I thought that Primarchs remembered everything.
I take your point.
He is also a character of action, she continued, turning to take up her staff.
With slow paces, she approached, her expression stern.
He excels at adaptation, the emergent strategist. Oh, he plans well enough, but it is determination that sees him to his greatest success. A determination to overcome everything set against him, despite the odds or the price.
Give me 6 hours to build a tower, and I will spend the first 4 measuring bricks,
Gilliman smiled, but his humour quickly faded.
I have spent many hours building Imperium Secundus, but he will wreck it in the next 5 minutes. We have only just begun what we need to do here. Long on the theoretical, short on the practical.
Is it so bad? Yuton asked, leaning heavily on the staff, her breath coming in quick wisps. Let him be the warlord. Devote yourself to being the statesman we need you to be. You will stop him going too far, you and the new emperor. The lion respects you and looks up to Lord Sanguinius.
The Lord Sanguinius is distracted.
The moment he uttered the words, Gilliman regretted it. Although he confided much in her, his chamberlain principal, the visions that Sanguinius had disclosed were a matter for primarchs alone, the business of the triumvirate and no others.
He has a lot to occupy him, she said. Another reason you must concentrate on what you must do and not second-guess others. Lord Sanguinius rules the Imperium, but you must run it. Manage the lion as you would anything else.
If he is of a mind to usurp me and is my match in intellect, how can I stop him without resorting to force?
Yuton turned down the path, heading towards an ironwork arch in the hedge that surrounded them. She was almost out of sight when her reply drifted back to him.
That is easy, my son. It is time to start measuring bricks.
The halls and corridors of the Invincible Reason rang with the clamour of battle preparations, the thud of armoured boots, whine of gunship engines, and roar of armoured vehicles never failed to excite Farith Redlos. If he had not literally been born to war, it had certainly raised him like a mother. It had started in an isolated stronghold in the Caliban forests, where each day brought attack from the beasts of the woods. Father, uncles, two brothers killed before he was six. He could load the wall cannons by the time he was tall enough to lift the explosive harpoons. Farith had been eight when the Lion and the Order had arrived, bringing with them the end of the beasts, but not an end to battle. Youthful, strong, obedient Farith had been an ideal squire to the lords of the Order, and by chance, when the Imperium arrived 4 years later and the Dark Angels Legion started to recruit, his pre-adolescent physique had been perfect for the implantation of the Space Marine organs and gene seed. Not born a warrior, but crafted as one. He stood on one of the gantries overlooking the main concourse that ran for most of the length of the battle barge, towering 20 decks in height. From the highest level, the lowest tier was swayed not just by distance, but by a fog of coolant vapour and exhaust smoke. It just added to sensation, a reminder of the dawn mists that had surrounded the castle of his childhood, each day greeted with a mixture of relief and apprehension. There was no more apprehension. He did not crave death, but he no longer feared it. He leaned on the rail of the balcony, admiring the lines of warriors moving from their dormers to the launch bays, steps ringing in unison. He felt the approach of the lion before he heard the whisper of warplate servos and the strangely quiet tread on the steps behind him. For a giant, the Primarch moved with the lightness and grace of his namesake. Truly a hunter of the forests in every way.
Everything is proceeding according to drill, my liege, Redlos said as he turned and saluted his Primarch. Stennius reports the fleet is dispersing to drop formations across orbit as you have ordered.
The lion said nothing, but looked past Redlos at the Space Marines below. He nodded to some unspoken query, his face impassive.
Would you forgive a question, my liege?
I am not famed for my forgiveness, said the lion.
He held Redlos's gaze for a moment and then smiled, though the expression lacked warmth.
Ask.
Is this really needed? Why do we chain ourselves to Macragge when there are still enemies abroad in the Imperium? Is one world so important?
The world? No. It is only remarkable because Lord Gilliman grew up here. But here we have placed the throne of the new emperor, and so it is here that our future will be decided.
The lion closed his eyes and leaned on the rail beside Farith. Redlos did not feel like interfering, though the Primarch's unusual openness unsettled him.
Lord Sanguinius, I have placed my trust, my faith in him. I cannot serve the emperor. And so I have found a surrogate.
The Primarch opened his eyes.
their gaze hard as he stared down at the moving columns of troops. His nostrils flared as he took a deep breath.
Imperium Secundus must succeed.
He faltered. Redlos wanted to be anywhere else than on that balcony at that moment, the hesitation in his lord more frightening than any foe on the battlefield.
I chose to come to Macragge because I feared that Gilliman wanted to replace the Emperor. Now I have become complicit.
Has Terra really fallen? Farith asked quietly. Since the elevation of Sanguinius, even before then, it's been insisted that Horus has taken Terra. Such is the justice of what we have done. If not...
Vanity, whispered the Primarch. If Terra has held, then this endeavor is nothing but the vanity of three fools.
There followed a minute and more of uneasy silence. Farith wanted to be excused, regretting the decision to question his lord. That was another reason for the wings, to act as confidants and advisers, away from the burden of command and the structures of hierarchy. He should have sounded out Danaeus instead, allayed his concerns with those that understood them. It was not in the nature of the Dreadwing to question the motives of their commanders, openly or otherwise. Their existence was predicated on the removal of obstacles without recourse to explanation or justification.
I do not know, confessed the Lion, not looking at his subordinate. It seems likely. Gilliman does not gamble. Sound theoretical principles applied with practical acumen. Imperium Secundus is the surest guarantee we have against Horus. Sanguinius is essential to Imperium Secundus. Gilliman's theory, which we must put into practice.
It is that I don't understand, my liege, Redlos told the Lion.
The Primarch straightened, his manner guarded. He drummed his fingers on the rail for a couple of seconds.
That was not really the answer you were looking for, was it?
No, my liege.
Farith gestured towards the Space Marines assembling in the levels beneath them. The tramp of their feet was blotted out every few seconds by the reverberating clang of launch bay doors shutting. The sound reminded Redlos of the underground shelters beneath the castle where he had grown up, used when a particularly large beast or a host of the Nephila came upon the settlement. The doors would crash close like those of a tomb, and the people would quail inside, wondering to what destruction they would emerge. But the sound comforted him. It was not his mausoleum, they signified, but the slamming coffins of his foes.
Who are we supposed to fight, my liege? He asked. We are an army, not a policing force. If we drop on Macragge, it is to wage a war. Who is the enemy?
The Lion looked at him with a frown, of confusion more than anger, though the twitch of his lips signified some irritation.
I have already told you. Kurz remained here while we chased across the 500 worlds.
Yes, my liege, but how do you plan to find him?
His Primarch smiled then, and Farith Redlos did not enjoy the expression. It was as bitter and cold as a Northwild's wind.
Kurz will reveal himself. He cannot hide forever. When he does, we will be waiting, and not Gilliman nor any other will stand in my way.
The Lion stalked away, leaving Farith with an overwhelming sensation of relief. It was short-lived, as the Primarch's words hit home. The crash of feet across the ship was drawing to a close, but their martial beat rang true in Redlos's thoughts, filling him with foreboding, but also excitement.
First gunship away,
Stennius reported over the command vox.
Destination, Macragge Civitas.
It was time for Redlos to head for his transport.
We have come. We are death.